back. WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are out on the road doing 31 crab cakes and 31 breweries in 31 days to celebrate 31 years of radio here and getting ready for the football season. Luke's out in Owings Mills, as well as with the upstart pennant race, Baltimore Orioles. I am getting authors on this summer, in addition to eating crab cakes and politicians and running all over the state. David Marinus joins us now. He has written a book, Path Lit by Lightning, The Life of Jim Thorpe. If I don't know, you could be a writer or a reader and not be familiar with David's work, whether it's Pulitzer Prize winning back in the Clinton administration, or then following the follow-up and all that, and beating up Newt Gingrich, which is now a three-decades-old proposition, and writing about Roberto Clemente and Barack Obama. But this time he's picked up the story of Jim Thorpe, which my father told me. My father was born in 1919 in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So my father was much older than I, but I grew up with a little bit of the legend of Jim Thorpe. David, it is a pleasure to have you on and taking time out from writing these short stories that you write, and these books. Just a pleasure to spend a little time
with you.
Thank you very much. So Jim Thorpe, first question for any author. You write books, man. You write little stories about big people and big topics. This seems to you're more of a modern guy, as I see, writing about Detroit, writing about fixing the world. This is a 100-year-old story that you felt like needed to be told in a better way, huh?
Absolutely. You know, I consider it, Nestor, sort of the third book in a trilogy of my books about sports figures who are larger than sports. So for all of my books, I'm looking for two things. One is a dramatic story, and the second is a larger historical or sociological significance. So with Vince Lombardi, the first of those books, it was not just about this fabulous football coach who won 5 championships in 7 seasons, but also about leadership and about the mythology of competition and success in American life, what it takes and what it costs. For Clemente, it was about the rise of Hispanics in baseball, this beautiful baseball player, but also about sort of that rare athlete who truly was heroic. You know, so many athletes are called heroes and they're not. Clemente really was. You know, he died trying to deliver humanitarian aid to Nicaragua after an earthquake there. His motto in life was, if you have to have a chance to help others and fail to do so, you're wasting your time on this earth. So Thorpe is the third of those books. In this case, it was not just a chance to write about arguably the greatest athlete the world has ever known, someone who did things that were unparalleled, winning 2 gold medals in the decathlon and pentathlon, being twice an All-American football player at the Carlisle Indian School as a left halfback and defensive back, then the first great professional football player and the first president of the NFL and a Major League Baseball player. So all of that combined was part of the story. And then the larger significance is my chance to write about the Native American experience through his life. He was from the Sac and Fox Nation in what was Indian Territory of what became Oklahoma, and he endured many things over his life as a Native American.
Well, David, just piling into this, there's so much to sort of unpack in all of this, but when you pick a figure and you start to dive in, I'm from Baltimore, right? You could talk about Babe Ruth. You could write about Muhammad Ali. You certainly Colin Kaepernick right now, right? And we talked about Kurt Flood even before we came on the air with a baseball background and what we do. But the Thorpe story is 100 years old now. Do you feel like it wasn't completely told? I mean, I see you as you're not just here painting the broad brush and what everybody else has written about, because he was written about and reported on and in a different era where people didn't become athletes to have financial benefit, right? I mean, it was a completely different kind of place, the sporting landscape of where he came from back then. But I would think that this is a story that 100 years later, maybe there's a lot of people along the trail that would tell a different story. And certainly the racism part of this, as it pertains to modern life, is something that we don't think about it in those ways, other than maybe Thanksgiving dinner, we talk about it a little bit.
Well, you know, Nestor, people still write books about Abraham Lincoln, right?
Sure.
Or George Washington. Or, you know, people from 1,000 years ago. So the fact that that he was born in 1887 wasn't really a factor in my thinking, because I could see that so many of the issues that run through his life are relevant today. And, you know, as I started reporting this book, the whole story of what happened at the Indian boarding schools became a big issue. you know, first in Canada, where they did sort of a reconciliation about what they had done to the Native Americans there. And then in the last couple of years here in the United States, the motto of the Carlisle Indian Industrial School was kill the Indian, save the man. Now, you know what that meant? It meant rid them of all of their Indianness, take away their religion, their culture, their language, cut their hair, dress them in cavalry uniforms, and try to make them assimilate into white society as much as possible. It was, in one sense, promoted by progressives who thought they were doing good, and at the same time, incredibly dehumanizing. And that issue has also become very relevant in the last few years. Similarly, Thorpe's medals were taken away from him, you know, 110 years ago. When did he get them back? Last month. So that's still relevant as well. So there are so many ways that I could see that this story was still very much alive.
David Marinus is our guest. The book is Path Lit by Lightning, the Jim Thorpe story. And putting it just from your perspective of, I guess, 5 years ago, what did you know about Jim Thorpe? I mean, I may have known a little bit more because I had a dad of that era. I don't know that Jim Thorpe shows up on ESPN much, right? I mean, I remember the old Gowdy baseball card that was a football card in the 30s. And I even Googled that before you came on and thought, you know, is that a $100,000 card? Is that a – no, it's a couple $1,000 card. Like the legend of him versus name any Mickey Mantle in the 20th century or name any Johnny Unitas in my market or the heroes, right? That heroes come and go. I don't know that the world is – you know, that everybody that watches ESPN knows about this guy or what he did. So there is a part of this where – maybe his story doesn't come to us the way maybe Babe Ruth's does or Michael Jordan's does or more modern people.
I'm not sure, Nestor. I mean, you know, he was voted the greatest athlete of the first half of the 20th century above Babe Ruth, above Joe Louis, above all of the baseball players and boxers and tennis players and golfers. He was voted the best. So many people that I talk to, when they say, you know, when I say I'm writing a book about Jim Thorpe, they say, oh, I read about him in fourth grade.
Right? You know? Cartoons, that's about, right? Like a little kid's book.
Yeah, literally. Exactly. So that's the level.
Bunyan, right? Like, yeah, yes, literally.
Yes. So that's the level of most people's understanding if they know about him. But I haven't honestly had that difficulty as the book has come out of people saying, who's he? People know something. They know that he was Native American and that he was a great athlete. That maybe that's the extent of their knowledge. But, you know, I mean, even in college football today, the greatest defensive back gets the Jim Thorpe Award because he played 60 minutes. You know, he was known for everything. I mean, he was a great left halfback. He played defense as a defensive back and linebacker, and he was a great punter and a great place kicker, you know. So in football, at the Hall of Fame in Canton, he's the first great figure there. He was the first president of the league. He was the greatest player at the formation of the league. I don't know. I mean, you're right that
I'm just saying, you wrote a big book, right? But 5 years ago, how much did you really know about him to
not
be
much
able to put a book together? Yeah, yeah.
I knew like fourth grade level understanding of him.
So what did you peel back to figure out this is a book? You know, at one point, you know he's a legendary figure, but what were you seeking to explore in telling his story over the last couple of years?
Well, as I said, I wanted to frame his incredible athletic experience through the frame of the Native American experience during his lifetime. So he was born in 1887. That was the year of the infamous Dawes Act, which was the government's effort to take away Indian land and put them on private property, take away their whole aspect of communal land. So millions of acres of Indian land was taken away from the Indians because of the Dawes Act, which was an effort to mainstream them into white society, making them private landowners, but really diminishing their land holdings. So that's what created – people have heard of the Oklahoma land rush, perhaps. That land rush was white people taking Indian land, basically. So that's how Thorpe was born. And then he went through the whole Indian boarding school process in the 1910s and 20s when not only had they taken away their land, now they were going to take away their culture by assimilating them into white society. He died in 1953 when there was another effort to eliminate all Indian reservations. So I saw a way through his life to really talk about American history and what happened to his people. And the key point here, Nestor,
sure,
is that they survived. There was a point in 1915 when the number of Native Americans in this country was down to 250,000. And there was an essential feeling that it was over. The race was going to disappear. You know, there was a famous statue called The End of the Trail, where that showed an Indian slumped on horseback. And the notion was it's the end for the Indians. But they figured out a way to survive. There are now a few million Native Americans. They persevered, and so did Jim Thorpe through all of his troubles.
Well, the book is out, and there's tons of praise on the back cover for it, as there usually is for two-time Pulitzer winner David Marinus, Path Lit by Lightning, The Life of Jim Thorpe. You know, I would just say for all of your writing and the political writing and going back to Newt Gingrich and hatred in our country, I'm not shocked that you take on biography things. It's what you do. Mm-hmm. But on the topicality of your work as a journalist and where the world has gone, boy, there's just a lot of hatred, right? I mean, I just drove out to Western Maryland last week having crab cakes and just seeing the Brandon this and the Biden that and the Trump. Yeah. I, as an American, we all want to have pride in all of this for our country. But, you know, this is an ugly story to some degree, right? You know, about the time and the space. Different than Black Lives Matter, different than any struggle women are going through in our country, in our culture, all of that. Yeah. But it's sort of eternal, isn't it? A part of the American.
You know, it keeps coming up in different ways. But the danger that I see today, Nestor, is the attempt to eliminate the teaching of honest history. It's only, you know, honest history doesn't diminish this country. It's an attempt to make it better and see its real talents and flaws. And so, you know, the book banning that's going on now, that hatred of anything that doesn't portray everything in glowing terms. I mean, this country, you know, I mean, the genocide against Native Americans, the slavery of African Americans are part of this country's history. And we still have to deal with that. And we're seeing it today. And so I see this sort of retrograde action to try to get back to what people thought was the good old days, which in their minds was a purely white Christian society, which is not this country.
Nor has it really been its history, right? There are always people here of color that have done a lot of the work, too, right?
Exactly, yes. As Lin-Manuel Miranda says in Hamilton, immigrants, they get things done.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far from Thorpe, and I'll get back and I'll keep holding it on, but I can't have you on without talking about the body of your work as I sit here last week talking about Detroit and a renaissance. I'm in Baltimore, right? You can see I call it Baltimore Positive. David, I did sports here, sports radio for 26 years. My wife got cancer 8 years ago, and I started doing more community things. My wife's beautiful. She's had two bone marrow transplants. A German man has saved her life on the bone marrow registry. And I started talking about more things. Then we had Freddie Gray. Then really, which I think will become a defining part for all of us, the day that Donald Trump was elected. We're now going on 6 years later after all of that. Man, you wrote stories on Hope, Arkansas, and Bill Clinton, despite all the transgressions, and Monica Lewinsky and all that, and Barack Obama and Hope, and these were your biographies of all of this. I can't imagine, I mean, as we sit here on the eve of Trump probably going to prison, probably having issues here of all kinds, it's really become a different type of American story. I don't want to say you heroized or, you know, did that for Clinton. They got elected, but you tried to humanize them to some degree and talk about them. And to your point, flaws included, right? And we're all flawed.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, some ways, Nestor, I feel that I was naive my whole life. I mean, I didn't think that American democracy was this fragile and this much on razor's edge as it's been in the last 4 years. You know, when I write so that people can just have a deeper understanding. I don't preach to the choir. I just try to tell the facts the way that I see them. And so I have people of all different ideologies liking my books, whether it's the one about Vietnam or about Lombardi. But I do feel very strongly about the search for truth, the incredible negative effects of fake news. I mean, not just fake news, but diminishing the real effort to seek the truth, and the way that democracy is on edge now. I think we're at a very serious point in our history, unlike we've been in quite a while. And I'm nervous about it. But I just, my mission is to keep trying to explore American life and history in a factual, truthful way that people can get a better understanding and maybe see some commonality. I mean, one of the major themes of all my books is the commonality of the human experience.
David Marinus is our guest, a two-time Pulitzer winner. You can go pick up any of his books on Clemente or Vince Lombardi. He tackles big topics and big subjects with big pages. Talk to me about books, right? Like, this thing arrived and it was big and heavy, right? You can see it. And I wrote a book. I don't have it around here on the Ravens. And my Ravens book was kind of big and heavy. And I remember a dark day for me. I mean, at 2014, we win the championship. And I go down to Ocean City, Maryland. I put a book together, 450, 500 pages about the backstory of Joe Flacco, all this stuff. And I went down to a Ravens fan convention to sell books. The book was right after Father's Day. It's June. It's at the beach. There's 10,000 fans. We just won the Super Bowl. I've got stories in the book that I didn't even know about. And I had person after person come by and say, that book ain't got no pictures. Ain't got no pictures in there. I don't read. I don't read no books. I ain't read no books. And then, of course, 2 years later, Donald Trump becomes president and famously loves the uneducated. You're still writing big, thick, serious books. I'm sure this is Kindle-y and you can do all that. But man, there's something about having this as a writer and as an old newspaper guy that I want to cuddle it, hold it, and feel it. I don't know how much longer we are for this, but you're still doing it.
I'm doing it the old school way. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I still read newspapers, real physical newspapers, Nestor. You know, most of my friends have now just gone totally online. I am old school in that way. And I hope I can do it for the rest of my life. But, you know, I always maintain that it's not the length of the book, it's what it reads like. So I think that once you get into a good book, you want to keep reading. You know, if you get in a bad book, it can be 100 pages and it's too long, right?
Oh, there's no doubt. And you picked a great story in Jim Thorpe. So are you – you're obviously up on everything that's going on. Do you come back and want to – tackle what's going on in the heaviness of the world right now? Is there something sort of eating at you in that Woodward kind of way or Bernstein kind of way to sort of get after the real world again and not live in the 100-year-old story?
I have mixed feelings about that, Nestor. First of all, you know, I'm still affiliated with the Washington Post. I'm still doing some editing of projects there and some of my own stuff. And I will come back in the next election year, 2024. I do that every 4 years for the Post. But I'm sort of like a professor emeritus there. They let me write my books and then be involved to some extent, to the amount I want to. I certainly feel deeply about what's happening today. But let me put it this way. I feel so strongly about it that I'm not sure that I should write about it. I don't know if you know what I mean, but for the Washington Post, I mean,
well, that's why God made op-eds.
Yeah, well, I've written a few of those. Exactly.
I know. Yeah. But just on a book stand, I have authors on all the time, right?
Sure.
But like Leibovitz, this.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, number one on the Trump's man. And sure, of course. Like those kinds of books are still being written and they must be consumed to have a greater understanding of what Fox News, CNN, MSNBC are giving us in snippets to understand what's happened here.
Yeah,
we need smart people like you tackling this stuff, David.
No. And I'll tell you why. I mean, Mark Leibovich is a great friend of mine. I love what he does. I would never do that kind of book. I don't write books that a year from now seem irrelevant. I try to write books that last forever. So all of my books, I view with that perspective. You know, there's so many of these books about Trump that you consume, you read. Do they change anything? I'm not sure. But then after a year, who cares? I want a book that lasts, that people go back to for generations to learn about something.
Well, it's certainly writing about great people, not bad guys, right? Like you know, you're trying to write about the essence of what makes someone great, not what makes someone evil.
Or makes someone interesting and complicated. I don't think I can write a book about someone I truly hate. Let me put it that way. So for someone like Bill Clinton, I found periods of his life where I disliked what he was doing in periods where I found him admirable. And I realized that he was that contradictory figure where the good and bad were inseparable. So I can deal with that. But if someone who I just found irredeemable, I'm not going to write about. I'm not going to waste 4 years of my life writing about that.
Well, you spent time writing about Barack Obama, who's still a relatively young man and engaged in different ways. What's his pathway? And certainly you wrote about him at a different time, 15 years ago on the first side of hope and the other side of the pendulum of racism, quite frankly, in this country swinging. I would think if I pick your book up, it's a different read 15 years later.
I don't think so, because that book is about the world that created him and how he recreated himself. I'm still going to work on a second volume about the rest of his life. I'm waiting for him to finish his the second part of his memoir before I tackle that. But my first book, again, I don't think you would see it any differently 20 years from now than you did when it came out, because the book ends before he's in politics. I mean, it's really about the incredible world that created him and his journey to try to figure himself out. You know, as someone who was had a white mother and an African father, coming out of nowhere in Hawaii, so many sort of who am I is the question that I try to deal with in that book and explore how he figured it out.
David Marinus is our guest. The book is Path Lit by Lightning: The Life of Jim Thorpe, told in lots and tombs, as I would say. I would say this for you in writing about these key political people and obviously being very included on as a Pulitzer Prize news writer and staying up on the real world. Sports is intersected in this for you, right? Like that you have picked Lombardi, picked Clemente, now Thorpe at this point. Sports and our culture, and it's what I've done for 31 years here. I'm out eating crab cakes and drinking beer, celebrating it. But certainly in my town from my childhood, and the reason I'm here is in Aparicio, and Brooks Robinson and the Orioles are back on, and the way football engages our community. Sports in America, you couldn't write the story of America without sports over the last 100
no,
years.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, so I'm considered a political writer, but I write about sports. And my argument would be that politics can sometimes be very trivial and sports can often be very illuminating in terms of where this country's at and its sociology and history. So I try to find those sports stories that tell that larger story of our country. And I have no problems doing that. And, you know, I don't look at sports as the, you know, the toy department. I mean, there can be parts of sports that I don't really care about. I find some sports talk radio shows blabbing on and on about things that are completely don't mean anything. But there's a lot of meaning in sports, you know, whether it's Tiger Woods or Serena Williams or Jackie Robinson or Muhammad Ali or Roberto Clemente or Luis Aparicio. You know, there's so much in sports that tells you about this country. And that's what I'm looking for.
Well, hey, man, it's time spent with you is always time well spent. I hope everybody goes out and gets the book and completes their catalog. Path Lit by Lightning, The Life of Jim Thorpe. David Marin is back on the writing beat and hard at work. What's next? Come on. You got to tell me. Or are you going to be like that musician that says, I'm back in the studio working on my next project?
Well, how about this? I've done nonstop books for 30 years. Next year, I'm taking a gap year.
What? The world needs you to write more.
I'll be back. I know what my next book is, but I'm not talking about it yet.
Okay. See, I just like your next project. Thank you very much for your time today. Good luck with this. Please don't be a stranger around here when the next book comes out, because I want to talk to you about it and making the world a better place. And the next time I come on, I'll tell you about that day I spent at Camp Randall. Okay.
All right. Sounds great.
David Marin is splitting his time between Madison, Wisconsin, and Washington, D.C. The new book is out. Make sure you go checking that out. Check us out. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're in Eldersburg next week at Liberatore's. On Friday, we are going to be in Westminster at Rock Salt Grill. Meant to get there last year. Doing a lot of that. We're with the next governor of Maryland, Wes Moore, on Tuesday morning, the 30th. Be celebrating at Costas Inn, my homestead Dundalk. So lots of things going on. David, we appreciate you. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.